Yo, everybody, it's Sam Molyneux. Let's do a little tour through social media land from Rajat Soni. 1 ounce of gold cost 592 Bitcoin in 2011. Today it cost 0.020688 Bitcoin, a 99.9% loss of value of gold relative to Bitcoin. That is quite 1,000 times increase in the value of Bitcoin relative to gold. That seems quite important. From Eric Doherty, the House COVID Committee has released its final report after a 2-year investigation. Now, for those of you who haven't been around for a while, was it about 4 years ago, I put out the truth about COVID and Wuhan, the China lab and release and so on. And I got hammered really hard, a conspiracy theorist, it's all wrong. So this is the problem with censorship, is that you get hammered for being early and right, but you get no restitution or recognition for being late. And when people catch up with you later, right? So what are the major findings? The NIH-funded gain-of-function research at the Wuhan lab? Wild. The Constitution can't be suspended in times of crisis. Well, of course, otherwise they just invent crises to suspend the Constitution. COVID emerging from a lab leak is not a conspiracy theory. So that is really quite important. And the fact that they have not found, they said it come from pangolins or bats or whatever, they haven't found any source of this. So it's not a conspiracy theory. It was a perfectly valid and actually quite accurate line of inquiry. And you get hammered. And this is how a society just punishes its truth tellers over and over again, is you get hammered for being right and early and get no restitution when everyone else catches up. So good luck with the world. All right, a Dutch exit tax. It's actually quite common around the world. The Netherlands proposes a new exit tax for citizens who leave the country. Income and presumably capital gains to be taxed for 5 years after leaving the country, expected into effect in 2025. Yeah, they don't want people to get out. I mean, this is a great experiment in Europe, the EU. Let's have no borders. And of course, we can see how all of that is working. James Lavish. Oh, Eleanor Lavish from Room with a View says Bitcoin is, quote, 0.2% right now at 1% of the total global assets. Bitcoin is a $9 trillion asset and worth about $450,000. At 3%, it's worth $1.3 million per Bitcoin. Well, that seems quite important. That's this little graph there. And I'll put the link in the show so you can watch the whole presentation, but it is very, very interesting. This hurts me and pains me as a bald guy. So here are animals and how they look without fur. It turns into a half elephant demon beast, a bear. Chimpanzees, well, you find out how buff they actually are. And they look like something that's been fashioned from somebody's lower intestines and a testicle sac. That really is something. Parrots, absolutely beautiful. Look at the, oh God, demon bird. That is your nightmare, demon sleep destructor. Raccoons, kind of furry, kind of cute, a little dangerous. And here they look like rats that have swallowed too much helium and inflated beyond human proportions. Fluffy bunnies, oh, so cute and beautiful. And they look pretty traumatized. And what is that? Yeah, a wrinkled forehead with ears. You take off the, I guess feathers aren't fur, neither are spines. Horses, majestic and beautiful. And again, a kind of muscular nightmare fuel. Owls, yeah, that's not good. That looks like something that will steal your soul while you wait in line at the DMV. Oh, I was going over this. This is from the great Anthony Pompliano. He is the all smiling, all dancing Chad of the Bitcoin universe. A great guy. The average rent in America was $27 a month in 1938. New home cost under $4,000. So a new house was $3,900. The average income is 1731, so a little more than twice the average income was a new house. Of course, taxes were lower in general, but yeah, it really is something how much. And of course, my daughter was saying, why if the house price has gone up so much? And you know, anytime you have these things, you just need to look at two things, supply and demand. The supply of new housing is diminished because of all of the regulations and costs and expenses of building a new house. And of course, demand is up. If you have, you know, a bunch of kids, then they usually start buying their houses, you know, 30 or so, late 20s, early 30s. So you've got 3 decades to build the houses. But when you have a bunch of adults who come in through immigration, they want houses right away. And they're used to a lower standard of living. So they'll snap up the houses and live you know, 6-7 people to a house or more. So yeah, it's really tragic. And the unfortunate thing, of course, is that most people want to do better than their parents. And if they feel they're going to do worse than their parents, that discourages them from having children, which is a big, big problem. All right. New car, $860. Average rent, $27 per month. Tuition to Harvard University, $420 per year. Movie ticket, 25 cents. Gasoline, 10 cents a gallon. 3 cents for a postage stamp. Just wild. Since 2019, 47% of new jobs in Canada were in the government. It's mostly a fantasy economy up here in the Great White North that is sustained through debt and drained through remittances, which we'll get to later, and government jobs. Bitcoin for freedom, this is 10 hours ago. Rumors of Saudi stacking, 48 days until Trump takes office. Saylor presenting to the Microsoft board. U.S. states are looking at Bitcoin reserves. BRICS wants to break free from the U.S. dollars. Of course, Trump is threatening them with 100% tariffs if they try to do that. 115,000 Bitcoin have been taken off exchanges in the last 30 days. MicroStrategy is consuming the $135 trillion bond mark. And, you know, it's interesting because the government has a bunch of Bitcoin from Silk Road, or 10,000 Bitcoin or something like that, or more. And they've moved them to a new address. My guess would be that before Trump gets in, the U.S. will start dumping Bitcoin so that insiders can snap it up at reduced prices. That would be my guess. Who knows, right? Here's my entire business plan. Fell years ago, never gave up. I love this tree that fell over and just continued to grow. Will is everything in life. Everything else is a footnote. All right. Oh, this I'm gonna read this to my daughter because brain rot is sort of this young skibbity toilet Sigma stuff. And this guy is very funny and very witty. And morals are actually pretty simple. So simple, in fact, that we put them in stories meant for children hundreds of years ago. If you don't know The Ant and the Grasshopper, the story goes like this. The ant stayed on his Sigma grind set all the way through the happy summer weather while the grasshopper neat-maxed. That's not in education, employment, or training. The grasshopper neat-maxed and tried to blow up on SoundCloud. It's great. Then when I actually know what this stuff means. Then when winter rolled around, the ant was prepped and comfy AF while the grasshopper was stuck outside in the cold. We need equitable access to housing and food for underserved communities, cried the grasshopper. I'm being systemically oppressed. But the ant stayed inside and looked out this window. It's not that deep, bruh, he thought to himself. A skill issue. Then the grasshopper presumably died. The moral is the same as in the Bible. He who does not work shall not eat. Whenever morality gets more complicated than that, it's usually a sign that someone's up to no good, and morality is super complicated these days. If the ant and the grasshopper lived in today's world, the story wouldn't make sense without a mosquito pushing handout laws through Ant Congress called No Grasshopper Left Behind, taking 10% off the top for himself and paying news ants to call the worker ant hateful on Ant TV if he complained about the situation. If you can't write a simple children's story with your morals in it, they're probably not morals at all. It's very good. Very, very funny, and well worth a look. Oh, I lose all of that. Yes, I did. All right. So yeah, it sort of struck me that if the libertarians, I don't think any libertarian, there was David Gordon did a really, really bad review of universally preferable behavior. But if any of the libertarians, particularly the academic libertarians, what I was in contact with back then when I published UPB like 13 years ago or whatever, if any of the libertarians had given a review to UPB, it would have enormously helped the theory as a whole, but they didn't, which, well, history will judge. It's so much in the rear view for me now. I'm just happy to have done the work, and it will be the future to unearth and spread it. In July 2010, this is from Bloomberg, Professor Murray Strauss published, I always think of dancing spaceships at this point, published an article called 30 Years of Denying the Evidence of Gender Symmetry in Partner Violence, Implications for Prevention and Treatment, that highlighted censorship of the evidence of equal rates of partner violence among the sexes. I know this goes without saying, but partner violence cannot be conflated with other forms of violence such as street crime. In this thread, I will post screenshots of his summary for each of the 7 methods used to censor that evidence. It's really, conceal the evidence, and you can look at this in more detail, but female power through the court system to be victims is so intense that any sort of 50-50 partner violence statistics have to be buried. That's just for me. I love listening to good singers. So the passage from Schopenhauer is so brilliantly brutal. He writes, we are always living in expectations expectation of better things, while at the same time we often repent and long to have the past back again. We look upon the present as something to be put up with while it lasts and serving only as the way towards our goal. Hence, most people, if they glance back when they come to the end of their life, will find that all along they have been living ad interim. They will be surprised to find that the very thing they disregarded and let slip by and enjoyed was just their life. That is to say, it was the very thing in the expectation of which they lived. Of how many a man may it not be said that hope made a fool of him until he danced into the arms of death? Yeah, so, there's a funny thing that happens when you start getting close to 60 is that, and I've read this in a number of autobiographies, that your teenage years start to come back. Maybe it's like a 40-year, like 40 years ago, I was 18, right? So it's like maybe it's a 40, 45-year thing, but your teenage years start to come back with more happiness than sometimes you experienced at the time. Although I would say I had a pretty good teenage life. I mean, I worked hard, I dated and had great roommates and was parent-free from 15 onwards and all of that. So enjoy your life. Don't look back and say, I wish I'd enjoyed it more. Really, really try to enjoy things at the moment. And even negative things are worth enjoying as something that helps you enjoy the positive more. Like if you have a health issue and then it gets resolved, then that is part of how you enjoy your good health, right? Canada sends more remittances per capita than almost any nation. Yes. You should watch this. I won't do the whole thing. The fact that Michael Saylor, who's I think in the long run is going to outrun Elon Musk in capital accumulation. The fact that Michael Saylor only gets 3 minutes to talk to Microsoft. My God. I mean, take Microsoft Windows 3 minutes to boot up sometimes. They're not mentally ill. They're not mentally ill. Says, my mother, a two-time Trump voter in Florida, has moved closer to us in a safely blue state. While I don't know what her vote was in the 2024 presidential election, it wouldn't have affected the outcome. I strongly oppose Trump, as do my wife and her family who live nearby. Now, this is just not true. 99% of people just hate who they're told to hate and love who they're told to love. That's it. That they can't. They have no standard by which to evaluate things. All they do is they're usually, physically weak, and they simply then have to go along with the herd. And the idea that you would hate someone without knowing great details about their life, the fact that you would hate someone just because someone tells you that they're hateful or negative or, that really is one of the greatest human corruptions of all time. And it is the reason why good people often die like dogs in a deep and dark corner. So yeah, the fact that you wouldn't be troubled by, okay, I've been told to hate this person. Why am I told to hate this person? And what are the actual facts? They don't think that. It's really, really sad. Well, and then horrifying, right? I'm troubled by my mother's support of someone I consider morally abhorrent and dangerous, especially when she voted in a former swing state. Morally abhorrent and dangerous. No, you don't have any objective morals. And dangerous is simply something that you've been told, right? With the result of the 2024 election, my wife and her family are directing their understandable fury at my mother. No, maybe you've just been taught to hate your own flesh and blood by propagandists. My wife's sister said, if she voted for Trump again, I'm completely done with her. I expect that the next time they interact, it will not be pretty, but my mother is a member of our family and an invaluable caregiver to our children, right? She's pleasant and kind in daily life and moved far from her home primarily for us and her grandkids. And she is my mother after all. So look at that. She's a wonderful caregiver, great grandmother, pleasant and kind in daily life. None of that matters because you've been taught to hate. And to surrender your reason to propaganda is like voluntarily getting rabies as a dog. Hydrophobe, like you just become feral. You are turned into a blind, programmed attack robot with no sense of self or soul. It is just appalling. Right? Oh, she's wonderful. She's great. She loves the grandkids, pleasant and kind, and has moved just to help out with the grandkids. Your mother, doesn't matter. If you're told to hate someone, the fact that they're kind and pleasant and moral, and they make sacrifices for your family and are gentle and kind to your kids, doesn't matter. You're taught to hate them. You're taught to hate them and hate you well. And this is barely sentient. He says, I'm torn. My wife and her family expect me to brook no compromise and to speak out on an issue that feels existential to them, as it does to me. But because I know that her vote here doesn't make a difference, I have trouble feeling motivated to admonish her for her past and possibly present support of Trump. Now, of course, people don't support Trump. Trump's just some orange guy with a whirlpool blonde hairdo. It's not support of Trump. It's, you know, particular values that they prefer, particular approach they like. It has a lot to do with wanting the government to be smaller and less intrusion and so on, rule of law. So it's not just, people don't just blindly support Trump. They expect Trump to do positive things in their life. And of course, the same thing's true of those who support Kamala Harris and so on. So it's not support of Trump. It's, you know, if people oppose you politically, it's important to look at what values they're hoping to achieve through their political support and then see if you can find a way to align on those values, right? At the very least, they don't think I should expect them to be anything other than completely unfiltered with my mother. I appreciate the sacrifices my mother has made to be near her family and her children, and her kids love their grandma, and she is the woman who raised me, but my wife and her family will be channeling their anger at one of the few Trump voters they personally know, and my mother expects me to intervene and speak up for her, or to encourage my wife's family to be more civil. She sees her vote as a personal choice and doesn't seem to believe that she should be criticized for it. Ethically, is it wrong for me to hold my tongue or to try to negotiate the peace even though I agree with the substance of my wife's family's position? If I try to protect my mother from vitriol, would I be betraying myself or my wife and her family in order to preserve harmony and childcare, or would I be justified suggesting that we all lay down our arms given that her vote no longer affects the national outcome? If I try to completely opt out of having a role in this conflict, am I doing a disservice to all parties involved? What do we owe to ourselves and the respective warring sides in a situation such as this? Yeah. Yep. Well, what can I tell you? I mean, it's tough. When you get an ideologue in your life, it is very tough to you can't reason with them. And a lot of times, of course, it's people who are on the receiving end of government money just trying to protect the tax farm, right? So, President Trump plans to immediately rescind all of the Biden administration's student loan forgiveness plans once he takes office. Let's go. The Gender Studies for Men X account says this is really important to men. Women owe 80% of student loan debt. Biden's forgiveness largesse was to take tax money, 80% of which is paid by men, and give it to women trained in college to hate men by forgiving their student loans. Yeah. So it used to be that people who didn't plan ahead were kind of wiped out by winter in cold climates. And now, people who don't plan ahead, people who get useless, well, the Kevin Samuels, I'm a PhD, right? The people who get these useless degrees and don't think about, okay, who's going to pay for it? How's this going to affect my sexual market value? What man is going to want to take on $100,000 or $150,000 of debt in order to have kids with me? So winter is simply not thinking about debt, and people aren't dying directly, of course, but it means that their odds of reproducing get considerably lower, and debt is the new winter. Now, is this true? This is pretty wild to me. I did not know this. Santiago Pliego says, the challenge is that most of U.S. law is behind paywall and copyright. Seems insane, but it's true. Thomson and Reuters owns the copyright and has sued the only other company that has a private and legal copy of the entire corpus of U.S. law. So this is an AI. Is it true that a lot of U.S. law is behind paywall? Yes, a significant amount of U.S. law, particularly federal court records, is behind a paywall. The PACER system charges fees for access to these records, which has been criticized for limiting transparency and accessibility. Isn't that wild? They should, of course, be an AI model. There should be an AI model that's trained on law that you should be able to ask if you're in compliance or not, and that should be admissible in court. Because if AI can't figure out the law, how can human beings be subject to it, right? Yes. Whenever people say the word fragile, to me, this is just narcissistic contempt for people who disagree. So listen to this
for him to take their money away and give bracket. In all my years, I've never seen anything as fragile as a MAGA man.
The MAGA man. Listen, this is completely shallow and ridiculous. She can't help her voice. But I will tell you this, you know, one of the things that is extremely pleasant about being married to my wife, one of the many things that's extremely pleasant about being married to my wife is the fact that she has a very, very pleasant voice. A lovely voice to listen to. I personally, you know, it's like nails on a chalkboard. However lovely this woman may be, and I don't think she is, but I could not spend, you know, 50 years listening to this voice.
Brackett, in all my years, I've never seen anything as fragile as a MAGA man. Not only do they go around worshiping.
So she considers the MAGA man fragile, right? And she can't be seen on social media without literally cannon-fired globs of clown sex makeup. I mean, look at these lips. Look at the eyeliner, the mascara, the artificial eyelashes or the pumped-up eyelashes, the trimmed eyebrows. I assume the dyed hair. And so she considers Trump voters fragile, but she can't show her real face. She basically has to turn into this kabuki Picasso painting of hypersexuality.
Being an 80-year-old, overweight, unhealthy man who wears more makeup than anyone I've ever met. But
so Trump wears more makeup. I mean, honestly, how are we supposed to believe Trump wears more makeup than anyone I've ever met? You're literally looking into a camera, which is you're literally looking at someone who wears infinitely more makeup than Trump. I don't even know what to, like, how can you say this lack of self-awareness? It's truly staggering. Do these people not have an observing ego that tells them when they're being completely contradictory and ridiculous?
They take his win as some kind of personal victory for them when 95% of his voters do not fall into the tax bracket that will benefit in any way from his presidency.
Yeah, this idea that Trump only cuts taxes for the rich. I mean, it was really under Biden that trillions of dollars were transferred from the poor and the middle class to the upper class. Like, trillions of dollars under COVID transferred from the poor and the middle class to the upper classes, the very top tier billionaires. And yeah, I mean, so I don't know. It's strange to me. And the idea that, you know, Trump is interested in getting rid of the income tax and relying on tariffs, which would be amazing for the domestic U.S. economy. And these are just people, they've been told what to say. And I don't, you know, all I see in those eyeballs is matrix code. It's just programming from propagandists to repeat stuff.
They voted for him to take their money away and give it to himself and his rich friends, and they scream.
Okay, Trump has lost money in the presidency, right? I mean, there's a fairly famous chart. I'm sure you've seen it. I don't know exactly how accurate it is, but I think it's probably generally fairly accurate, which is the net worth of people before and after they become president. And, you know, Barack Obama went from very little to like 70 million or whatever it is. I mean, Nancy Pelosi is through the roof, but obviously just a great stock trader. But Donald Trump lost money over the course of the presidency. So the idea that he's just in it to enrich himself, that's just projection. You know, there's a huge number of people who rely on their status and income with sort of government regulations and affirmative action and so on. So, yeah, those people don't want a smaller government because then they'll have to compete in the free market and they may not make as much money.
Aim and holler like it's some kind of victory. On top of that, Trump allows them for the first time in their life to feel superior to others. They know that women's rights.
So this woman says, I've never seen anything as fragile and contemptuous as a Trump voter. And then she says, but, you know, Trump voters are just, again, I mean, the lack of self-knowledge is almost an intergalactic force of nature. Like, there's weak atomic forces, and then there are strong atomic forces, and then there are these people's capacity to delude themselves. So she holds Trump voters in infinite contempt, and she says that, well, Trump voters just like to look down on other people. I mean, what could you even say? This is a display of sheer anti-rationality, anti-self-knowledge.
It'll be taken away, that Latinos will be deported, that under Trump's administration, an open racism towards Black people will be far more accepted. And all of this makes the MAGA men feel good because putting other people down is the only thing that gives them joy in life.
So she's putting half the country down, more than half the country down, and she's saying that they only like putting people down. And those, man, this is like the Robert Shaw speech about the USS Indianapolis in the Jaws movie, you know, with lifeless eyes, like a doll's eyes.
They have an ego like a fragile toddler, and watching other people suffer is the way they get off. So, of course, they're all really happy right now.
So, and this is a thing that some women do, men do it too, a little bit more from women, is that it's a whole lot easier to psychologize. Sorry, that's almost close to English, isn't it? It's almost infinitely easier to psychologize people than it is to answer their arguments. Right. So, I mean, if you want to know the nature of modern femininity, simply disagree with women online. Now, of course, this is not representative of women as a whole, but all of this, you know, small penis energy and short man energy and, you know, you can't get laid. And like, you just hate women because they won't date you. They just like to put people down. They're just like, I don't know exactly who it is that teaches people to just engage in really silly psychologizing of other people rather than answering their arguments. But, and of course, I'm aware, I just said that, I'm just calling her a hypocrite, though. I'm not sort of saying what her psychological motivations are, but that this idea that you just, you make up people's motives that diminish them and you've answered their arguments. You know, Galileo is just advancing the heliocentric model of the solar system because he's jealous of Ptolemy and he's shorter than him and he's incensed that somebody else is getting more attention than he. It's like, shut up. You're adding anything. You're just subtracting. All right, I'll do this on a show. Oh, yeah, this guy, he went from a Viking prince to a guy who has a podcast. I'm going to be sick. Yeah, I don't know that that's a particularly great glow up. That guy's got great hair, and he should absolutely keep it long. Turning into the puffball dandelion head broccoli mushroom thing is not good. He was way better off before. All right, so yeah, look at this skiing. Yikes, these are treetops. This is how deep the ski is. I love skiing, but I may be aging out of it a little bit. When you get older, what happens is the number of people who have injuries accumulate to the point where you're like, ooh, risks are significant. I'm just going to let this play. This is really, I remember seeing, it'll come back to me. But I remember at a Bitcoin conference many years ago, somebody made this case. And you just got to listen to this.
A nation state, Bitcoin is digital power. It's 350.
You know, we can do this slightly faster, right? Yeah, why not?
Bitcoin is digital power. It's 350 exahash. That equates to $20 billion worth of computer equipment. And then you can value the energy. If it's 5 cents a kilowatt hour, you're getting to $5, $6 billion a year. That's what it takes to run the network. But that's not what it takes to attack the network. If I'm a nation state and I wanted to block every message for the next 6 hours, I need to win the next 60 blocks. And that means I need to bring online 3,500 exahash of computer power. The problem with that is if I hijacked all of the Google, Amazon, and Microsoft computer power, I could maybe bring on 5 exahash. So you would need 2,000 times as much energy. That's all the energy on Earth. Doesn't work. You need 3 Earths. What government do you know that would want to spend a decade failing to attack something? It's much more likely that you'll just flip everybody in that government to support Bitcoin by the time they finish that.
Right. Andreas Antonopoulos. There we go. I should remember that's a Greek name. So, he was talking about how impossible it was to hijack Bitcoin. Like, what was that, 8 years ago, something like that? I will do a theory from the theory of natural ethics. I'll have a look at that. Look at this. At $105,000, Bitcoin overtakes the market cap of Google. Sweet, sweet, sweet. Cutting people off in terms of Bitcoin. In terms of Trump.
Our biggest weapon right now is cutting people off that voted against your morals. It's driving them insane. They're like, I don't understand. Yeah, they do. Yeah, that is just feigned outrage because they didn't give a fuck about you.
I see this also coming from the right. You know, so-and-so is in a panic. They're panicking that, you know, this is seizures, you know, after Biden cut off investigations into foreign and domestic corruption by pardoning everything that his son did from 2014 onwards. Really, really quite something. You see this all the time. It's driving them insane. It's driving them crazy. This is sort of positioning, and it's an art view of life where, you know, in art, I talked about this recently with regards to The Great Gatsby. If you like an idea, you'll have a good-looking person who's confident deliver the message. If you don't like an idea, you'll have an ugly person deliver the message with great tension and frustration and emotional angst. And so it's driving them crazy. It's really painful for them and so on. Honestly, you know, having people who hate you out of your life or having people who've been propagandized into hating something that you approve of is a great benefit. It's a great benefit.
Wait, but they want to make you look like gaslight you to look like you're the bad person. Just keep cutting them off. Just keep doing it. Because all of these people have one thing in common, and it is narcissistic behavior.
See, here we go. Immediate psychologizing. Anyone I disagree with, look at those eyes, eh? Oof. Nothing in there. Lights are on, nobody home. So yeah, I mean, just immediate psychologizing. Don't evaluate anyone's arguments. Just describe them negative psychological characteristics, and you are away to the races.
Doesn't generally mean that they're narcissists. It means that they idolize a narcissist and perform in the same manner that that person performs as. So just keep cutting people.
So narcissists hate disagreement, and this guy's saying, those people I want to cut off for disagreeing with me are narcissists. Again, this is just absolutely chaotic, no boundaries, pure projection.
Off. Block them. Don't talk to them. Co-workers. If you have to talk to them, like business only.
No. I mean, there is a lot of pain there. And I do sympathize with that. And so people who become dependent on the media for their talking points have established entire tentacles of networks and social interactions based upon shared delusions. And it's really, really painful. You know, at some point, you have to ask yourself, or I think everyone has this at some point in their life, or almost everyone does, where you say, do people like me for my own original thoughts and preferences and perspectives? Do they like me? Or do they like the services I provide for them? You know, if you're a wealthy guy, you know, and your wife stays home, you got to look and say, okay, does she love me or does she love the lifestyle I provide? Right? A woman who's very attractive has got to say, does my husband love me or does he just love my attractiveness and how high status I make him look and how other men envy? Like, are you loved for yourself and your original thoughts, or are you loved for compliance with the needs and preferences of others? Oof. Well, you can't be loved for compliance. So that's really tough. Just because you fit in, it doesn't mean you're in the right place. It's a great, great little picture of the plates in the grate. Plate in the grate. All right. It was 1959. Bertrand Russell has a message to future generations of humans. If you want to be a free thinker, here's the first principle. So this is very interesting because I love the fact that all of these old videos, it's like in the end times, the dead arise from their graves, right, in the sort of end times of Christianity. And social media, and in particular, Twitter or X, is a resurrection of the dead and the gone. It's a resurrection of the dead and the gone. So this is a question that Bertrand Russell, there's some film footage somewhere from 1959, and it is back. It's like, it's incredible to see all of this old footage, all of these old lives, just come back to life through social media. It is a resurrection of the dead.
This film were to be looked at by our descendants, like a Dead Sea Scroll in 1,000 years' time, what would you think it's worth telling that generation about the life you've lived and the lessons you've learned from it?
I should like to say two things, one intellectual and one moral. The intellectual thing I should want to say to them is this. When you are studying any matter, or considering any philosophy, ask yourself only, what are the facts and what is the truth that the facts bear out? Never let yourself be diverted either by what you would wish to believe or by what you think could have beneficent social effects if it were believed.
Yeah, so I mean, that's very foundational. To some degree, it's funny because it's kind of how I was raised. And, you know, while I didn't enjoy boarding school from the age of 6 to 8, this was very much old school British education. So I was very much raised to believe, you know, tell the truth though the skies fall, tell the truth and shame the devil, that the truth shall set you free, and that you had to resist the boogeyman of imaginary negative effects. Well, if this is perceived to be true, then negative effects will occur, because that's just a boogeyman that can be used to chase away any rational thought at all. Any thought whatsoever can be run through the boogeyman of negative effects, which is why utilitarianism is a form of censorship, right? So utilitarianism is, we judge an idea not by its truth value, but by its utility and positive effects on society. But you can just create a scenario wherein there will be negative effects, and then you can censor, right? So this is kind of how I was raised. And, you know, one of the things that is different, I mean, my brother went to boarding school, but he sure as heck became a subjectivist and relativist. So maybe, I don't know, maybe it was just my... I don't know. I mean, certainly getting into philosophy at 15 was a huge help. But this idea that you just look at the truth of things and just, you know, follow reason wherever reason and evidence leads, and don't be chased away by the hand puppet boogeyman of negative effects or what you want to be true. So this was really valuable to me. And I remember when I was in boarding school, the professor was the headmaster was very old school. You know, it looked like he was a lord in some room in Downton Abbey or The Crown or something like that. And there was this just pursue truth. And it's so much simpler. It's so much simpler than all of this nonsense about, well, what could be the positive or negative effects of X, Y, and Z? Okay, well, what about fire? Well, fire could burn people, so let's not have fire. We have magic rocks that produce electricity, but occasionally they get destabilized, so let's not have them. I mean, just negative effects, negative effects. If you start to focus on negative effects, you simply cannot have any progress in society as a whole.
We can look only and solely at what are the facts. That is the intellectual thing that I should wish to say. The moral thing I should wish to say to them is very simple. I should say, love is wise, hatred is foolish.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm very much with the epistemology here and the metaphysics. But with the ethics, love is wise, hatred is foolish. But love and hatred are two sides of the same coin. You know, I can't love people without having negative emotions towards those who do them harm. This emasculation of anger or hatred or any sort of negative emotions is really, it leaves a society with no immune system whatsoever. You're not allowed to get angry at people. You're not allowed to hate anyone. And therefore, you can't resist anything. And those of less refined and abstract sentiments, and this tells me this is somebody who lived his life, and he did, of course, Bertrand Russell did live his life in a very refined and abstract and academic air. So the idea that we have these positive emotions that come from morality, and we have these negative emotions that come from the devil or our lizard brain or our animal nature and so on, and we must only embrace the positive emotions, we cannot have the negative emotions, is like saying, well, I do want all of the parts of my body that build muscle and keep me healthy, but I don't want any of the parts of my body that repel negative bacteria or viruses or tumors or whatever that attack me. It's like, no, your body survives on love of healthy cells and anger and contempt, in a sense, hatred towards dangerous cells. That's the only way we survive. So anyway, let's just go back a sec here.
Hatred is foolish. In this world, which is getting more and more closely interconnected, we have to learn to tolerate each other. We have to learn to put up with the fact that some people say things that we don't like. We can only live together in that way. But if we are to live together and not die together, we must learn a kind of charity and a kind of tolerance, which is absolutely vital to the continuation of human life. Huh?
Okay, so this goes right back to the paradox of tolerance, right? It's a sort of a well-known philosophical problem, which nobody can solve because it is unsolvable. So he's saying, well, we have to be tolerant and we have to accept that people say things we don't like and so on. Okay, all right. So then, if we don't do that, we are destroyed as a species. Like it is a world extinction event. Intolerance is a world extinction event. Okay, well, then what do we do with people who are intolerant? Well, you have to love and you have to be tolerant. Okay, well, what do we do with people who hate and are intolerant and will, you know, attack people and set fire to buildings and threaten with bombs and destruction, public speakers. I mean, you know, I've been subject to some of these things. So what do we do with the intolerant? If the intolerant will cause, according to Bertrand Russell here, if the intolerant will cause the extinction of life on Earth, are we not allowed to be angry with people who could, like according to his own logic, are we not allowed to be angry or to hate people who will cause the end and extinction of life on Earth? Come on. And this, obviously, this is just a guy who likes saying things that sound good. And he's a far too intelligent a man to not understand the tolerance paradox, right? That if tolerance is such a virtue, then what do we do with people who are intolerant? Well, we have to be intolerant of the tolerant in order for tolerance to be enacted as a virtue. So, and so the fact that he would say this pathetic drivel is really just insulting to the entire question of philosophy. All right, we can do this on a show. And I'll stop here. Oh, no, I'll do one more. I mentioned this on the show yesterday, but here's the chart, right? So if you bought $100 worth of Bitcoin every time the media called it dead, you'd have almost $100 million right now. If you bought $100 worth of Bitcoin every time the media said it was dead, you'd have $100 million right now. So the media, following the media, is just staying poor. It's just staying poor. Somebody says, I filmed a liberal activist trying to retrieve her iPhone back from the homeless that possibly stole it. She's encouraged them to sell anything they steal from rich scum, but that she's nice and honest and needs it back. So what does she got to say?
Basically, I am not, if you stole it from rich scum, by all means, keep it and sell it. But I'm And I want to say, if you guys come up with my iPhone, I will give you more than, like, I'm an honest person. Basically, I am not, if you...
Yeah, so she's going to try and reason with people because she's been around sort of civilized men who care about what women feel about and care about. So she's trying to plea for reason with people who are homeless. Now, of course, not that all homeless people are irrational, but this idea that you just plea, this is people, like their amygdala, their sense of danger is completely defunct. And of course, the idea that, well, I'm a nice person, but you can steal from the rich scum, right? Well, you understand this woman, right? The fact that she has an iPhone means that she is rich relative to these homeless people, right? Who are in a graffiti-filled trash heap of a bus shelter picking their nose, right? So she is rich scum to these people. So the idea that she, you know, I'm going to just deflect these people into stealing from others and reason with them and say, no, I'm one of you, I'm on your side, I'm really nice and honest and all of that, and I need it back and so on. It's like, it's wild. It's wild when people move out of a circle they can manipulate into a circle they simply cannot manipulate. This is sort of like when people who are who grow up kind of spoiled and bratty and they manipulate their parents into giving them what they want, and then they go to some place, usually if it's a manual labor job, they go to some place where they can't manipulate things, and there's this existential panic that kicks in. You can see this panic, right? She just wants her phone back, and she's hoping to just reason with people who really can't be reasoned with. So anyway, I hope that helps. I appreciate everyone, your time, care, and attention. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Let me know if you enjoy these kinds of shows, and I will then continue to, quote, be productive by bookmarking things I find interesting. So lots of love from up here, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye.